Date the tape?
Testing, yes.
Yes, we're here. This is Sunday, April the 28th, 1996. We've gathered for a meeting at the meeting room, and I believe the commander is here. Greetings.
Good afternoon. Did you get everything done to the tape that needs to be done?
Hope so.
Me too. It's hard on us guys. I come in light. I'm simply a teacher. Let's call me a radio messenger if you need something to identify with. But I think that all of you recognize me enough not to have to do that, not to have to concern or find your excuses to overcome whatever silliness might be thrust at you if you consider that you have a teacher or a guide or a friend. There is a song that would be worthy of all ones to remember, and most children learn it. And one of them is, Jesus wants me for a sunbeam. The other might be, what a friend we have.
Hello. Court? Hello? Anybody home?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we got you.
Okay.
How you doing?
Real good.
All right.
Wanted to listen in on the meeting if we could.
Here you are. The commander was just speaking.
We got stuck downtown here. So we're a little late in arriving. I apologize for that.
Well, so we were a little late starting. So everything is just coming out just right.
Just perfect.
All right.
Okay.
Here we go.
I'll put you on speaker.
Okay.
Well, we welcome our friends. I would share, actually, with not only the ones listening through the radio device, but you see, they have the same now imposition that you have here, only once removed. And it doesn't concern them that they are hearing me on a wire. Whereas it seems to concern a lot of people that you might be receiving in this manner. Seems like the more removed you get near the radio receiver, the easier it is to conceive the teacher. You're going to have to learn to come into oneness with your teachers, with your guides. I've had to choose a more mental, how shall we call it? I don't even like calling it lesson. We've been over it so many times. But let us consider what happens within the consciousness or the subconsciousness of each of you. We could go on and on and on, and every meeting talk about the heinous things that come against us. Another miserable, wretched bunch of papers from Mr. Horn, utilizing the very information that we share, only twisted greatly. The ridicule, the insults. This is their job. You can either accept it as being their job and knowing that you have control of it, or you can let it control you. It hits so often and so hard and in such massive amounts that it's very hard to be so close to the focus or the fulcrum of our very action, the pivotal point, the fulcrum. You're going to get it from every direction if you are the point of the fulcrum. And we, as your teachers and your guides, can help you through it. But as Les and Dormer were saying a minute ago, nobody can do it for you. And each of you will have your own separate set of impacting assaults. They'll flood over you. But somehow you will not accept those good things that happen as being an assault, do you? When you can accept the assaults as being the good things You've arrived. You have arrived. And all of your Far Eastern teachers will teach you this. There are no bad things. There are no really evil things in that you can't counter it. But evil does exist. And adversarial parties will always, in their ego drive, their ego needs, will assault you continually. And when you stop allowing that to get past that layer, that shielding of light, if you keep it around you, you'll bounce it off. It'll come into that outer layer where you consider it. You lay it out before you and you consider it. And then turn it over to mind and higher authority. Pray about it. Turn it over to God and let God, and God will give you the answer you need. And it will rarely seem to be the one you ask for. You've got to start really squeezing out these lemons. And I know the bitterness puckers you up for a while. Never go to bed without turning it over to God. Seems like everybody is so busy thinking of what to do at bedtime that you forget all about God. In fact, mostly everybody kind of wishes God weren't around at that time, and that's the very best time to commune with God. And don't put limitations. And I have to make it personal enough to get us this fulcrum, this pivotal point, this tiny nucleus through in wholeness, so that we can each reach out a little bit and hold up our brother. I think maybe I'll just let you read, because I'm going to really try to focus on this lesson today. Every one of you need it. There is not one of you that doesn't get distressed. And when that intent is to distress you and the pulse beams are to distress you, it's so much harder. And before we do that, I want to thank every one of you who come, especially from a distance, because it makes it almost impossible for Dharma to say, no, I can't go down there. And in that, I appreciate it. I really, sincerely appreciate it. She will take her responsibility if it means someone else will be disadvantaged. And when you realize that you are the foundation, the infrastructure, if you will, to our own ability to pass through the more damaging times, then we can make it, and we can make it in great joy. But maybe we need to share some of this other information too, and maybe they won't find so much to pick at. I've purposely put a lot of bait out there in every trap, and they've so far not missed one. Not one. And it is bewildering to the trap catching it. It'll be okay. What do you have to lose? I'll tell you one thing. If you lose in any battle that you have ongoing at this time, you really have a sick world, which is obviously not up for much discussion. So, EJ, maybe if you would just share the writing, then we can get on with dissecting it.
This is the writing from Sunday, April 28th, 1996. This too shall pass. In the never-ending cycles of sequenced interchange of the electric universe, it is always wise to look and then remind self that this too shall pass in its proper disposition. It is always wise to realize that those unseen things and invisible energies are always the most potentially useful. However, when you learn to connect the invisible with the clues and fragments of the visible ongoing sequence of events, you can come to know everything for in the clues lie the proper conclusions. Also, however, therein lay the improper conclusions, so always take exceptional care that you realize differences. What are the clues? They are mostly the missed things of happenings which ebb and flow throughout your living experience, which, if you connect your dots carefully and thoughtfully, a pattern begins to emerge. For instance, if you know that you have a so-called enemy in your midst, but you have no idea who that might be, but you get an accidental message left on your answering machine to a known enemy, you might suspect that the calling party, even though it is a wrong number or accidental dialing, is at the least doing something undesired for you to know. When this happens, you can know right off that it was an accident in the one instance, but you will also begin to look at the other things which have transpired and which then take place later. On what basis do you speculate possibilities? Well, if a caller is using frequently dialed numbers, it is easy to hit numbers out of sequence, i.e., perhaps one party is number 36 and yours in their directory is 35 or 37. Do you see how easy it is to misdial? All you may have is a pattern establishing itself, but it gives clues, and after all, clues are all you need if the enemy is within. Then there is intuition. Always there is intuition, so why not use it? Check out what and how you feel about a given incident or what you are told about the incident, and see if there are excuses given for the accident or was it simply a misfire. If you want to know the truth, the mind will find its way. If you really want to accomplish something, the mind will find the way. The mind is the important factor here, for it will always find or create a way to accomplish what your thoughts express in desire. If you have no goal, no dream, no vision, then there is nothing to accomplish, and therefore you will never accomplish much of anything worthwhile. Why? Because you will lock yourselves into the mass of zombie doers, just moving along a track which enslaves you to the ordinary. What is desire? Desire is prayer. Further, it is not the thing believed in that brings an answer to man's prayer. The answer to prayer results when the individual's subconscious mind responds to the mental picture or thought in his mind. This law, and yes, it is a law, of beliefs operating in all religions of the world and is the reason why they are psychologically true. As a man thinks, feels, and believes, so is the condition of his mind, body, and circumstances. A technique, a methodology based on an understanding of what you are doing and why you are doing it will always help you to bring about a subconscious embodiment of all the things of life. Essentially, readers, answered prayer is the realization of your heart's desire. If you do not limit the manner or sequence of realization, you will always get your petition answered. The call compels the answer. Desire is that which causes you to focus unrelentingly onto your goal. However, it is not enough just to want something. You must desire the goal actually be fulfilled. You may wish to lose 10 pounds, but until you really desire to lose that 10 pounds, you probably will not, for it doesn't really have much importance to you. When, however, you make up your mind to accomplish your goal, there is no way that you will not do it. In the same line of recognition, until you decide that the most important thing in your existence is your oneness with God, you shall be tossed on the sea of all other impacts along the way. God does not hit you like lightning as a usual habit of his gaining your attention, for his is to allow you to make your free will choices and experience the consequences of those choices. Fulfill your desires. Let us look at why people fail. The principal reasons for failure are lack of confidence and too much effort. Many people block answers to their prayers by failing to fully comprehend the workings of their subconscious mind. When you know how your mind functions, you gain confidence. Right answers are inevitable when thoughts are positive, constructive, and loving. From this, it is perfectly obvious that the only thing you need to do in order to overcome failure is to get your subconscious mind to accept your idea or request by feeling its reality now, and the law of your mind will do the rest. Turn over your request with faith and confidence, and your subconscious will take over and answer for you. I do not, students, speak of using coercion, mental or otherwise. The facts are that no coercion is of God. Your subconscious, in fact, does not respond positively to coercion. It responds to faith or conscious mind acceptance. As I deal with Dharma's experiencing, through the maze of legal encounters, we have to constantly work to overcome the first floods of negativity. The negatives are, not more, I can't stand more of this garbage. Things are getting worse, not better. I just don't know what else to do. When these attitudes come forth, and until you can get your goals reestablished and uppermost in mind, then you will get no response or cooperation from your subconscious mind. You will not move forward nor backward. You will simply be stymied in the moment. Let us consider that if you go into a taxi and you immediately give a half dozen different directions to the driver in the first 3 minutes, he would become hopelessly confused and probably would simply refuse to take you anywhere. It is the same thing when working with your subconscious mind. There must be a clear-cut idea in your mind. You must arrive at the definite decision that there is a way out, a solution to the vexing problem which pops up in every turn of your life. When you reach that clear-cut conclusion in your conscious mind, your mind is then made up, so to speak, and according to your belief, it is done unto you. Thought guides. In using your subconscious mind, you infer no opponent. You use no willpower. You imagine the end and the freedom state. You will find your intellect trying to get in the way, but persist in maintaining a simple, childlike, miracle-making faith. Picture yourself without the ailment or botheration. Imagine the emotional accompaniment of the freedom state you crave in that problem solution. Cut away the entanglements of the red tape approach, for the simple way is always the best way. You are going to have to discipline your mind. Here is where science must enter into the equation. The facts are that the most wonderful way to get a response from your subconscious mind is through disciplined imagination. As previously pointed out, your subconscious mind is the builder of the body and controls all its vital function. Remember the old and good advice, whatsoever ye shall ask in prayer, believing, ye shall receive. To believe is to accept something as true, or to live in the state of being it. If you sustain this mood, you shall experience the joy of the answered prayer. The three steps to achievement of this end never vary. 1. Take a look at the problem. 2. Turn to the solution or way out known only to the subconscious mind. 3. Rest in a sense of deep conviction that it is done. If you are sick, for instance, do not weaken your prayer by saying confusing and negative things like, I wish I might be healed, or I hope so. Your feeling about the work to be done is the boss. Harmony is yours. Know that health is yours. Become intelligent by becoming a vehicle for the infinite healing power of the subconscious mind. Pass on the idea of good health to your subconscious mind to the point of conviction. Then relax and accept the healing.
This is a good point to interrupt. There are so many terms in your languages that are ridiculous. Health is one of them. Whether something works, that's not a thought. There is a choice to be made in whether or not something works. There is a mental vision, if you say, bad health or good health. Or normal health. There's something you can relate to. But in all of your journals, almost always, you will find just what I just said in this writing, which is incorrect. Most of the time, you mentally refer to health as being positive. I want health. Well, you've got health. Well, I'm running a temperature. Don't you always run a temperature? Even if you're dead, you have a temperature. So always be aware. You're going to, when you give instructions to that subconscious mind, you better pay attention. Because it is going to be explicit. It might drag along there with you implicitly as it becomes accustomed to what your mind is actually thinking. But the more explicit you can be in your instructions, the more quickly you will reach that desired goal. So keep these things in mind, because oftentimes we're going to fall into the same sloppy habits of referring to health instead of whether or not that is good health we wish, or a lot of us are suffering from bad health and truly enjoying it and kind of, you know, secretly hoping maybe the bad health hangs on long enough to do whatever it is we want to accomplish. So let's be careful about how we word things, and the only reason I interrupt is that you must consciously realize that you make these errors in feeding your subconscious mind instructions. Go on, please.
Repeat the last sentence. Pass on the idea of good health to your subconscious mind to the point of conviction, then relax and accept the healing. Get yourself out of your way. Say to the condition and circumstance, this too shall pass. And I expect the best answers in the sequence best established. Then let it go, while never overlooking the feedback. Through relaxation, you impress upon your subconscious mind the enabling and kinetic energy behind the idea to take over and bring it into realization. If you, further, always ask in a way to have the highest good presented, then you shall be able to accept whatever thing comes as the best way, and all you need to further do is use it to best advantage. If, as with Dharma this day, there are more looming depositions with a most unlikable fellow at the helm of the dinghy boat question machine, this shrewd twister of all answers to his advantage while leaving out all accompanying material is a pain in the you-know-where. But remember that the accompanying material is also right there for your attorney to use. The point is to ensure that your attorney uses it wisely and properly. If, however, you simply bog self in the dread, you can have no positive gain from the encounter. Remember your goal and use his entree to whatever happens. His focus will be the total opposite of yours in whatever confrontation, so turn about the information to use for self.
The trouble is trying to get your attorneys to see this. I can even example from the last deposition and how it's truly being twisted in the most recent set of documents which arrived last night. At one point on the 24th of May, there was a set of circumstances. This was in 1988 on May 24th. And obviously, as you are experiencing the now, it's all you have. Now, this many years later, it's a memory. Now, what can you do with this memory that you experienced in the moment and move it toward the potential future? You have to be aware right now of these different fragments overflooding you. So let's look at some of the things that happened. Later on, there was a deposition, and who was in that lobby that day? Well, it was 10 o'clock in the morning, and there were some women, and there was one man, and there were these other things that happened. So in deposition, you lay this out. As your recall mechanism goes into engagement, and you picture yourself walking down a given hallway. Let's see, Mr. DeCary's office was to the right if you were headed west, and, you know, the mind is trying to work out this pattern, reproduce it. Was the auctioneer there? No. Was Mr. Mitchell there? No. All these years later, you go back to deposition, and the mind now has more facts to work with, more puzzle pieces to fit in there. So now, Mr. Horn would say, oh, there is a radical change in Mrs. Ecker's response from her deposition here and from what she said before. What she said was, I have come to believe that Mr. Mitchell came through the room. Are you saying that the auctioneer was there? In retrospect, I believe that he was, she said. Pin down. What makes you think that? Well, about 3 minutes to 10, a man walked up the front steps from Truxton, in through the door, had something in his hand, more like an envelope or something in his hand, but was dressed very, very casually. It was very hot. He opened the door. He just walked straight through the lobby down the hall. Mr. Ecker was seated there, didn't even notice him other than just somebody walked through. Mrs. Ecker was perched on the end of a bench, so as this man walked through, it would be much as if you walked to the jury box and you didn't turn your head, but you glanced out the side of your eye. The man walked in the front door, glanced very briefly, did not change his expression nor his direction, and walked straight through. Now, later on comes the unraveling. The man from across the street, if it were him, and as Mr. Mitchell later, it was proven, did, he said he was there in the building. Now, facts come in, telephone calls. He made a call from the phone where Brent and Rick photographed him on Chester in front of the Hall of Records, between it and what was a bank. That's his usual place of phoning. Now, this same man comes over to the city hall and down that hall where Mrs. Ecker saw this man go, didn't know there was anything down that hall. There was the restrooms and a phone booth, it turns out. But this was unknown in the morning at 10 o'clock on May 24th, 1988. Now it is known that Mr. Mitchell made a phone call at 2 minutes of 10 from that phone to his business. It's recorded. So was the one he made across the street. Now we've got two. Now, in about 4 minutes, 5 minutes at the very most, here comes the same man up the street going in the other direction. And there's no real reference to the man other than a statement made. Oh, look, EJ, there is the same man that just walked through here. There must be a rear exit. He obviously didn't stop to look around to see if he should hold a sale. This man looked like a delivery person who maybe would go and drop off a letter, which is assumed that that's what he did, and just exited the rear door. But Mr. Mitchell, by record, made a call before from across the street, in the hallway, right in front of these people, really. And then, in a very, very few minutes, he made another call from across the street, from the same phone. It's all documented. So what have you here? You have a man saying he was in the building doing a sale. Only his records for that day show that he did two continuances and two sales. So if it only took a couple of minutes per sale, he still would not have the adequate amount of time to handle two sales. So now, in retrospect, Mrs. Ecker can remember she saw the man. He was clean-shaven. Mr. Mitchell is now bearded. Says, I believe now that that was probably him. How do you believe that? Well, he said he was there and the time, and therefore I assume it was him. He really didn't look like what I see with Mr. Mitchell now. Are you saying Mr. Mitchell was there? No. I'm saying in retrospect, I believe it was him. When have you seen Mr. Mitchell otherwise? Well, in court, in the hallway. I also saw this same man making a talk to two people right in front of me who said, "Oh, what do we do now?" as they looked at our witnesses. And he said, "We go with the story we have." And they never showed up again. But the company, Santa Barbara Savings, and the other ones involved said there were three witnesses as secretaries, one real estate agent to witness his sale. Then in deposition, he said, "There was nobody there. I was alone." Oh. Now you've got a crowded room, haven't you? Or steps or something. It would be harder to miss five or six people, wouldn't it? Now this man was still clean-shaven when he went to court. And he was still clean-shaven when the first deposition was had. The second deposition, the man looked older. He had apparently had a slight heart attack or something, and he had grown a beard. But still, the mind says, in retrospect, I believe that that was Mr. Mitchell. Now, Mr. Horn is basing his entire new thrust on the fact that Mrs. Ecker has totally changed her testimony. And in the new light of this, and now, what does this mean? Nothing. It doesn't really mean a hill of beans except for one thing. Before these people even got copies of their depositions, Mr. Green had one. And he had called Dave Williams on Sunday morning before Dave was out here. And guess what he says? "Now, they say there was somebody there." Now, you know that Mr. Green has access to that deposition because that is the only place under the sun he could have gotten it, was directly from Horn. And there were several other things in that conversation that alluded to those depositions. And I'm repeating, before you had it, Green had it. So never, never, never underestimate the value of what may seem to you to be a negative feedback. All the attorneys have to do, for goodness sake, to get what they want is to get up before that judge with the case and stop playing these idiotic, ridiculous games. It doesn't matter if the Eckers are the biggest thieves in the United States of America and Europe combined. There was no sale on the 24th of May at 10 a.m. at the east front entrance of City Hall in Bakersfield in 1988. And that's it. Everything else came later. If they didn't have the funds and the man held the sale, it would be known like that and it would be over. If they didn't have enough money, it would be like that and it would be over. Now you tell me how somebody plans to rip off a savings and loan. How do you cause that man not to have a sale? And how is it, and I don't want you to forget this, Mr. Ecker, you now have the valid information in a court document you need to get Jason Brandt. Stephen Horn throws this order, this court order, in front of Mrs. Ecker, and she reads it. Have you seen this before? I don't think so. I don't recognize it. Are you sure this is Jason Brandt's signature? This is the judge's order. Oh, well, then maybe I have seen it before. Do you see right here it says, rip off Santa Barbara Savings by their own words or their own admission? That's what Jason Brandt said about these people. Light bulbs engage. The whole flashing, you know, light, come on. Is this the reconstruction hearing. Well, of course it is. Did you say that? No. That would be a stupid thing to say, wouldn't it? Not even in jest. When is that? Is that the reconstruction? Well, what do you mean? This is a judge's order. Well, Mr. Horn, you know, on one of those last hearings, Judge Jason Brent was so abusive and so insulting. And there were witnesses there, and there was also witness to the fact there were audio tapes being made of the proceedings. The tape was checked. And then by the next day, or at least no longer than 2 days later, when you try to get a copy of the tapes, all of the clerks remember there were at least two copies. That means three tapes, and they're all gone. Gone. And now nothing. You have nothing. Only to get a bill from your attorney a month or so later to find you're being charged. Get this. You're being charged for a reconstruction hearing. What the soup is a reconstruction hearing? On the phone to your attorney. Mr. Hornback, what in the world would this be? Oh, well, since the tapes were missing, Judge Brent had a reconstruction hearing. What are you talking about? We were not told this. Oh, well, we didn't really think it would be of much interest. Well, who was there? Well, Mr. Horn and Judge Brent and myself. And Mr. Ecker says, well, I certainly do hope you got it on the record, all the things that man said, and that there was not allowed to be a hearing. Oh, well, no, not exactly, because they insisted, you know, that because we were there and so forth, and this is a reconstruction hearing, that it was heard. And Mr. Ecker said, that is malpractice, Mr. Hornback. Now, this order comes back, and it says, by their own mouth, we're going to rip off this savings and loan, and we're going to steal the house. Actually, he didn't say that. George Green did. And listen, listen, in what he has said to other people on the telephone, George Green has said, EJ told me, George, that I'm going to go down there and steal that house. And then with $10,000, why didn't he say $100 or $1? But you see, this gives you all the information you need to know. Judge Jason Brand has also said $10,000. It went into one of the court records as $10,000. And now George Green has told you where it came from. Don't ever, for 1 minute, underestimate the value of this. And Judge Jason Brent has now been brought into the record. And it's been brought in as recently as yesterday. Mark your limitation statutes. Now go ahead and read. And I want court to know that goody, goody, goody two-shoes, he's coming after court. And that's what we have wanted. Corporation will stand.
Remember your goal and use his entree to whatever happens. His focus will be the total opposite of yours in whatever confrontation, so turn about the information to use for self. If your cause is just and right, the right use and attitudes will accomplish your task, and the lying, cheating adversary will not prevail according to your goal. If you expect the enemy to win, he will. This brings us to the law of reverse effort and opposites. When your desires and imagination are in conflict, your imagination invariably gains the day. Let us example. If, say, you had wide planks on your floor and you were asked to walk one of the planks, you would do so without question. But now suppose that plank were placed 50 feet in the air between two buildings. Would you walk it? Your desire to walk it would be counteracted by your imagination or fear of falling and would dominate your ability to trust your balance. Your dominant idea, which would be the picture of falling, would surely conquer. However, a high wire walker would think nothing of walking a 12-inch plank. Consider your aptitudes and talents in every instance so that wisdom is your guide, but the moment of reaction is not your driving force. Remember that your desire, will, or effort is reversed in such choices, and the dominant idea of failure would be reinforced. Mental effort is invariably self-defeated, eventuating always in the opposite of what is desired. The suggestions of powerlessness to overcome the condition dominate the mind. Your subconscious is always controlled by the dominant idea. Strongest of two contradictory propositions.